The mega franchise known as Star Trek has produced a slew of movies and 10 different TV series, the latest of which is a brand new animated comedy called Star Trek Lower Decks.
The show was created by Mike McMahon, who worked on Rick and Morty, and it tells the story of some of the least powerful officers on Starfleet's least important starship. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today we are talking about Star Trek Lower Decks on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Black voters play a crucial role for any Democrat who seeks to win the White House, but some big divides amongst that bloc and some serious ambivalence could determine who is elected president this November. Listen now on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Also with us from her home studio is NPR Books editor Petra Mayer. Hi, Petra.
Live long and prosper.
And joining us from his home in Washington, D.C. is writer and critic Chris Klimek. Hi, Chris.
Hi. The needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many, or the no, I did it wrong.
You did. Yep.
Petra took the easy one.
Sorry.
So Star Trek Below Decks is actually the second animated Star Trek series, but it's the first since the mid-70s, and it's wackier and more broadly satirical than Star Trek itself typically gets. Think Star Trek crossed with Rick and Morty, as well as other TV science fiction comedies like Futurama and movies like Galaxy Quest. In Star Trek Lower Decks, we get a group of young oddballs and hotshot senior officers on the USS Cerritos, which is supposed to perform kind of unsexy bureaucratic space missions. The cast includes Tawny Newsome, Jack Quaid, Noelle Wells, Eugene Cordero, Don Lewis, and Jerry O'Connell. And because it's animated, you also get your epic battles, your space zombies, your spectacular mass destruction. Glenn, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of Star Trek Lower Decks?
Yeah, I reviewed this for NPR, and I came out mixed positive, I think. I mean, I love the idea of this show. I'm still waiting to see about the idea of this show. I mean, the idea of an in-canon Star Trek comedy, I'm all in on. Not sure we needed one because Galaxy Quest is a thing already in the universe. And it's great over and above its status as a parody. It's just well-written. It's well-acted. There's also out in the universe, the Orville for others. But it does make sense to make a Star Trek comedy because this is an immense, established, institutional, fictional universe. So, of course, you want to goof around with it without having to do all the sweaty work of setting up like an analogous, not legally actionable, you know, the Klingons are attacking. You don't have to do any of that work because it's all done for you. I like that it's animated because, as you mentioned, that means an unlimited special effects budget because Trek TV special effects can look cheap and Trek movie special effects can get dated pretty quickly. Here you can have aliens who look like aliens instead of day players with silly putty between their eyebrows. You can have other worlds that look actually otherworldly. We've seen the first four episodes, and the show has a very respectable joke density, but its batting average is not quite there yet. It gets better as it goes. Maybe I'm just getting to know the characters. But over those first four episodes, what's happening also is that it's undercutting its whole organizing principle, and that's my main issue here. This show is supposed to be Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Trek, right? This is everybody else except the bridge crew. We just follow them, but with each and every episode, we're getting more and more of those bridge officers. And I just want the show to stick to its guns, stick to its phasers. And it's not yet. But anyway, mixed positive.
How about you, Petra?
Yeah, my reaction was it's hashtag fine. I mean, my overwhelming feeling about it is that it doesn't know what it wants to be yet. It can't decide whether it's funny or whether it's heartwarming in earnest with these moments of wonder at the visuals of space. For me, the joke density didn't register because most of them didn't land. You know, as Glenn said, it got better, particularly in the last half of the fourth episode where I'm not spoiling what happens, but there's a crazy tonal shift that made me go, what? Okay, this was made by the people that made Rick and Morty. I'm not going to rage quit it the way I rage quit Discovery, but I'm not totally sold. And yes, I know Discovery gets better, so just leave me alone about
that. Yep.
Whole thing about Discovery. Not going to talk about it now.
We'll save that for another episode. Chris Klimek, what did you think?
You know, looking at my own response to this, as well as hearing yours, I'm reminded of an Onion headline that dates back to the 2009 J.J. Abrams reboot that was Trekkies bash new Star Trek film as fun, watchable. I'm kind of coming back to that as well. I mean, my point of entry into the whole Trek universe was Wrath of Khan, which was itself an attempt to make the franchise more appealing and accessible to normals after a first feature film that was too slow, too talky, too contemplative. The tempo of this thing is just wild. It occurred to me watching it that there is about as much plot in each of these 25-minute episodes as there is in a typical, you know, 44 to 52-minute episode of any of the hour-long Star Trek, primarily dramatic series that have preceded it. So pace is what's really different. And Star Trek has never been afraid to bore you a little bit because it's usually dealing with these high-minded concepts that need a little reflection to land. So what makes this kind of work for me is comedy. I do think the joke hit rate is a little higher than it is for some of you, at least for me. But, you know, it makes it look like pretty successful as comedy, not so successful as Star Trek. And I've decided that's okay because Star Trek, there are so many branches, so many spinoffs. You need a way to come in. And, you know, this could be another generation's Wrath of Khan, I guess, where I, you know, I eventually went all in, but I needed something, a way to just dip my toe in the pool. And I think that's kind of what Lower Decks is.
Yeah, I think I had a similar reaction to it. I'm coming into this show as somebody who has seen dribs and drabs of Star Trek in various iterations over the course of a lifetime, but I'm not deep into it. I don't have a strong sense of the mythology. I am clearly watching this show and not on the same wavelength as a lot of what are clearly kind of inside jokes. I could kind of feel certain jokes on this show sail past me and just sort of assuming like somebody somewhere is laughing their head off right now. But at the same time, I am a huge fan of these kind of big, broad, epic science fiction cartoons like Futurama that are playing with a lot of science fiction tropes and ideas. And I get a sense that this is a show that is finding its footing as it goes along. I mean, you mentioned, Petra, that it takes a little bit of a turn in the fourth episode. I feel like a lot of shows are a little bit slow to develop because they're not introducing necessarily the concept of Star Trek, but they are introducing who these characters are and kind of what they stand for and what they're about. And I think like the turn that the fourth episode takes, there's like a subplot where like the hotshot Daredevil is being put in her place and they're trying to figure out how to like get her to quit. So I enjoyed that. I found in general, like I didn't love it. I wasn't laughing hysterically very much watching it, but I was enjoying it. It was because it was hitting me kind of on a Futurama wavelength.
The fact that it's animated and the fact that it's a comedy are both combining together to push everything about the show to extremes, mm-hmm. to make it really broad. So the plots are bigger, the violence is bigger, and also the characters, I think. I mean, I'm getting to know the characters, and I like them more as I get to know them. But initially, man, I found Mariner, the main character you mentioned, the hotshot, voiced by Tawny Newsom, I really found her obnoxious. Really couldn't deal with her.
So Tawny Newsom, also a lead on the Netflix Space Force series, where we actually do get to see her face. She's on camera, has not been terribly well received, that show, but I think she's very good and she's in a more tamped down characterization. And that show, although very similar, she is a helicopter pilot who aspires to be an astronaut. So she's dealing with the same themes of ambition that Lower Decks deals with. Like if she reads as obnoxious in this, I think it's just the animating effect in a way of you know, each character having to be flattened and broadened. And again, that super accelerated tempo, the fact that we're trying to do a full emotional character arc for everybody in 25 minutes instead of 50 minutes, I think that does come off as a little abrasive, but I wouldn't put that on Tawny Newsom. I think she's very good.
Yeah, I think Tawny Newsom is great in this, and I didn't necessarily think that character was obnoxious. I think they're putting a lot on that character to just like rapid fire dispense with jokes and like you're sort of racing to catch up with what some of these characters are all about. I think that's a really funny performance.
I understand that we have to take time to get to know these people, but the episodes are so crowded and overstuffed that we get these big emotional character beats that just aren't earned in terms of sort of depth of characterization. So everybody has a trait that gets hammered over and over again, like Mariner is the Daredevil loudmouth. Although I will say that Devana the green-skinned Orion. That was a reference that I appreciated. She's a green-skinned girl from Orion. You know, there's a thing called an author insert character, right? She seemed like a show insert character, if that's not too meta. She was so eager and so earnest and so desperate to be liked. I was like, you are the embodiment of this entire show, and I'm not sure what I think about that. I also want to say, speaking of like racing to catch up, I've got my notes here, and I was keeping a little hashtag for each classic or older Trek reference that I came across in the show, and I just gave up, and it says, lost track of references during Mariner's speech at the end of episode one, because it was just so packed. Like, just...
Yeah, and I was really mixed about that, because I just have this thing, and it's a me thing. I just don't like the notion that the characters from the original series are celebrities in this universe. I mean, of course they would be, because, you know, they were the first to boldly go or whatever, but I don't like them mentioning Kirk and Spock. But then, in that same little bit at the end of the episode one, she tossed out a Gary Mitchell reference, and I was back in. I'm like, okay, this is for me.
That was for us.
Yep.
So how much do you want Star Trek to riff on itself? I mean, it's one thing to have like all these parodies of Star Trek. Parodies of Star Trek have existed. As you note in your review, Glenn, they were common. They were thick on the ground as far back as the 70s. How much do you want Star Trek itself to be joking about itself?
Again, I like the idea because, again, Trek has poked very gentle fun at itself with references episodes of, I think it's Enterprise, where the characters go back in time to be on the actual original series episode. So they're playing with that. But it's so gentle and so restrained and so kind of staid. I like the idea of going bigger. I'm not sure the fuel mixture is right here yet, but I do think it's going to course correct.
I just want to disagree slightly with Glenn. I don't want Trek making fun of itself. Half the joy of Trek is how earnest it is and how unintentionally funny it is. And that may be because my first true fandom was, you know, original flavor Trek, which we all know is just a laugh a minute, even though they didn't mean it that way, except for The Trouble with Tribbles, which is supposed to be funny. I think you might actually be talking about the DS9 episode Trials and Tribulations, which is where they
go back.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. Which is a really good episode.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't want Trek to try to be funny. That's our job, not theirs.
I think I'm right in between on that. I like the fact that there are jokes in this that you could pull right out, and like they're not exclusively Star Trek jokes. They would work in anything. For example, I was trapped in a sentient cave. That's a dark place that knows things. Great, great joke.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, you could put that in an episode of New Girl or something, and no one would look askance at it. This all goes back to the original series for me as well. And Kirk, our fearless leader. I mean, he was the rule breaker. He was the rebel. He was the daredevil. You know, Spock, everybody else were the ones always quoting regulations. So to invert that and to have one of the lowest ranking officers in the ship being the person who's bucking the rules and, you know, kind of being very reluctant to conform. I do think that even though that's kind of a trite place for a character to begin, I mean, it's Top Gun. It's so many things, you know, the young, cocky upstart who needs to learn that the rules exist for a reason, which is the arc that we get for young Kirk in the J.J. Abrams movies, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I still think just inverting it here pretty much works. And the reason it works and the reason the show mostly works for me is that it is only one piece of this massive Star Trek constellation. You know, after I had finished watching these four episodes and thinking, well, it's funny, but it's not super Trekky, I clicked over in my CBS All Access app to a recent episode of Star Trek Discovery, which I had fallen off of long ago, and thought, I'm just going to drop in on an episode at random, and it was incomprehensible. And I was like, yes, this is the Trek that I remember. There are so many nouns in that sentence that I can't identify. There is not a joke within 1,000 parsecs. I think that's a Star Wars thing, not a Star Trek thing. So knowing that I can still have that anytime I want it makes me very open to the accessible, fun, watchable Star Trek Lower Decks that I hope will maybe hook in a few more people and, you know, get them to drink the Romulan ale.
Nice. Well, we want to know what you think about Star Trek Lower Decks. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May the great bird of the galaxy roost on your planet.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. One last thing before we go. We're going to be covering Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra in two separate episodes. We want your questions about each series. If you have a question, email us a voice memo at pchh@npr.org. Again, you can email us a voice memo at pchh@npr.org. We'll see you all right back here on Friday when we'll be talking about the new documentary, Boys State.